You just looking for somebody to be.
Yeah,
between
yeah.
The
yep. This is Mr. Ritchie.
Right.
He is a PR and a PR Queensland.
Right.
So he's just got some submissions he's going to make. And then I'll put a summary which I'll take it through as
well.
My name is Peter Ritchie. I'm speaking today as you are a very small part of the land on 38 Ford Road. And Ritchie is about the road on 30.6 Ford Road, but it's an interest of the closest plan. I am aware that the Westfield Group, on 70, is also supporting the project plan, which will remain in the slot for the zone. So I was quickly make you aware that I'm also a land surveyor and a landscape architect. My partner from over here, she's an architect, and we have a small practice called Curvature Architects.
Right.
In my submission, this is, in my opinion, quite narrowly focused. It's not looking not critically at the benefits of good urban design or explore the implications of rural associated with both zones. It's better than the evidence that Mr. Vivian groups of the business mixed use zone is to provide more complementary commercial business retail and these mentioned uses to up from the activities and services provided by town centres. I can see different opportunities close to employment and recreational activities are also enabled. Significantly greater building heights are enabled in the business mixed use zone in Queenstown, provided that high quality urban design outcomes are achieved. In my submission, the business mixed use zone could equally be called the residential mixed use zone, as it is an enabling of commercial zone that allows for a number of activities, not least residential, with a greater intensity than the high density residential zone allows for. It is a zone that, in my submission, allows scope for more innovative design solutions to accommodate activities, including residential. An example is the worker accommodation building shown below. The building proposed that this is used on the North Road, which was consented to but not built due to economic constraints. The business mixed use zone could, in my submission, accommodate buildings as shown above, and it allows for heights up to 20 metres, 6 levels. The high density residential zone does not, in my submission, allow for genuine high density. While on the face of it, the building height described in the high density residential zone could be considered reasonable to allow the general intensity. The recession plan rule 9.5.6.1 below has a large impact on the ability to fulfill the general intensity. I won't go through those rules and the high density residential zone. 9.5.6 allows for a recession plan that's 2.5 metres high than the government property land, 5 degrees. The below section being an indicative image of height and decision plane of each development. The area shown between the green and the purple lines contain a very valuable volume of space that allows for density and diversity of development close to the town centre. So in that little diagram, I'll just show you that it's like a three-level building, and even that three-level building with the decision planes, the high density, it certainly doesn't comply. Whereas it doesn't fix use zone, doesn't have those decision planes, and allows for a far greater scope of volume to develop. I also attached a page from the Queenstown Town Centre study in 2009, which considers that the subject land could be a future stage of the Queenstown Town Centre. It lists some reasons why they consider this to be a valuable option, a viable option. We are not advocating for the zoning, so let's be strong and suggest that the subject land is complementary to the town centre. So that here is a page of the 2009 Queensland Town Centre. It talks about, well, it showed the book, which included the subject of the question at the top of that diagram. So this statement concludes, the rezoning request may undermine the role of the Queenstown Town Centre Zone as the primary focus for economic activity and may affect the walkability and practice of the Queenstown Centre. In my submission, the central and low-lying area of Queenstown are intended to accommodate larger and denser buildings in accordance with good design and urban design principles. The subject land has a benefit of Horn Creek that runs to the west of the site, providing energy, well-being heart, to provide for the Eastern Link. It's my submission to Queenstown needs to embrace a future of greater density to enable this vibrant town to avoid horizontal expansion. These subject property, together with the current business mixed use and possibly the current Auckland High School land, could provide more density and diversity to take Queenstown to a more sustainable future.
Richard, one of the, I think, primary reasons that was given by the council candidates for opposing this submission was actually the effect of commercial activity. What comment do you have on the prospects of commercial activity and if it was to be zoned mixed-use business?
Well, I think some commercial activity, especially on ground level, could well add to the vibrance of that particular area, like some small cafes, some small businesses. But I don't think that once you start getting up, you know, to this first, second, third, fourth level of a building, it's likely that commercial activity would occur. As an example, with a client not far from this area here, they've come to us and they're looking at, they're a small business and looking at the ground floor as being possibly a little cafe associated with it being close to the street, getting a good relationship to the street. But then once you get above that, certainly there's the desire to have residential use.
What do you consider would be the likely or appropriate scale of commercial development for this business mixed use?
Well, I think the business mixed use zone allows for a greater height.
No, I mean the business activity. Well, when you talk about ground floor.
Well, I think if you look here now, you see there's some physiotherapy, there's some cleaners, there's a number of businesses that are starting to sort of permeate into that particular area. I think it's, you know, business mixed use zone is there to complement the town centre. And I think it's important also to realise that what we're talking about here is only it's five properties which are basically between the town centre and the business mixed use zone. So the business mixed use zone does actually run right up the Woods Road beyond these sites. So
includes the Mackenzie Willis site.
And it includes the Mackenzie Willis site and the house next door to it as well.
Would you see if the zoning, if we were to agree with your submission, that the activities such as the Mackenzie and Willis could be repeatable on that section, or would you foresee something different happening?
Well, I think it would allow for something like Mackenzie Willis possibly to be recreated, but I think that the generosity of the height would hopefully allow for potential developers to look at this, in a far greater scope and density in terms of other activities which could be associated with Mackenzie Willis. I would hope that, I just don't think it's a necessary efficient use of land just getting it from Mackenzie Willis, a single legal, well, you know, maybe a double legal building there. And I think there's a lot more scope to provide a really interesting and diverse group of buildings, including, quite high density residential.
And I know that your submission is specific to the sites facing Gould Road. Do you have any opinion on the entire block?
I personally think the whole entire block would be amazing for the whole entire block to be zoned business mixed use. It's got that creek that runs right through it, and I think, you know, with the high density and with the amenity of the creek, it would provide very interesting little alleyways and, you know, just very sim- similar to what was built in aircraft cities overseas. You know, we just kept, New Zealand's very good at building these very low rise and these precision planes, but you just don't see that when you go to great cities overseas with high density, nice laneways and to connect to the creek. It'll be a very interesting block to land.
Thank you.
I'm just interested in your comments on the recession plans, because of course they recession plans are imposed for a reason, and it's really the effects on the immediate neighbours in terms of sunlight and building dominance. So is that going to occur in this, potential for that to occur in this location?
Well, I think that there's everyone, you know, I think this has to be some of the areas where you accept that low density amenity is not going to occur. Now, again, when I think about when you have larger urban centres, you just don't come across in these some great cities around the world. These 45 degree recession planes that cut off these buildings. So I think you could very well end up with a very quite odd looking buildings situated in the air. You can go up to 10 or 15 metres, and so they sort of come up to a peak. And I think if you've got a whole block that the neighbours understand that they can build. I guess more people will design for that. I mean, you still can only build 75% of site coverage. And I imagine you may well build, cut out courtyards and there'll be residual space which will still allow sunlight to penetrate into the sites. And the Horn Creek will also allow another level of amenity to allow sunlight to build up against the creek to allow sunlight to penetrate through the buildings as well.
Yes, I could understand really what you're saying, if the whole block was going to be a new, but as it stands, you've got a row of medium density residential, presumably housing, along Robins Road, adjacent to it. Wouldn't that be rather dominated by what you're proposing?
On the west side of Robins Road.
Yeah.
Well, I think in the west side of Robins Road there's the primary school, and then there's a motel in two houses.
There is actually a large area there which is not part of this stage, and we don't know what the zoning of that will be.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just
Thank you, everyone, for your
patience. That's just brilliant. Thank you. So I've got a summary. Start with paragraph 3. I've read the rebuttal evidence of the statement in paragraph 14.2. The statement agrees with my evidence in chief that the building height may not be as great a concern in regards to immunity as she considered in her private evidence. Ms. Devlin further notes that she would not support the spoke or site-specific rules if the site was only for business to produce, as sought in paragraph 3.2 of the motion in chief. The only rule I sought to amend in my evidence in chief was 1662, which related to notification, or more precisely non-notification, of activities, and it was my opinion that this site should be excluded from the non-exclusion or non-notification. However, if such amendments are not adopted, then it does not change my opinion as to the appropriateness of the business misuse zone open subject site. In paragraph 14.3, Ms. Devlin maintains your primary concern is that the site is too close to the Queensland Centre Zone to be complementary and would be competitive instead. Ms. Devlin maintains that if the subject sites were zoned business mixed use, the walking distance from the Queensland Town Centre Zone to the business mixed use would decrease from 290 metres to 170 metres, which makes it, quote, easy walking distance of an easy walk from the council building through the car park and along Gorge Road. It is important to note that the Gorge Road car park will always act as a buffer between the town centre zone and the request of the business mixed use zone, and that the car park office is designated in the district plan for such activities. Ms. Devlin then states the PDP proposed Queenstown Town Centre Zone expansion on Brecon Street is also closing in on the site, reducing water distances from that part of the town centre zone to the Sinchin site and related concerns about competition. I'm unsure what Ms. Devlin means by related concerns about competition, and of course, 6 of the first schedules that Act deals with trade competition submissions, and it's difficult to see how a person in that town centre zone at Brecon Street could be directly affected by the requested business mixed use zone. Ms. Devlin continues that zoning the subject site of business mixed use would be inconsistent with policies 3.2.111 and 3.2.112 in particular in regard to providing a planning framework for the Queenstown Central Business Area as a key commercial hub of the district and avoiding commercial rezoning that could fundamentally move in the role of Queenstown Central Business Areas as the primary focus for the district's economic activity. With respect, I disagree. As discussed in my evidence in chief, the purpose of the business mixed use zone is complementary commercial, business, retail, residential uses that supplement the activities and services provided by the town centres. Whether the business mixed use zone is 290 or 170 metres from the council building is irrelevant in my view. The important thing is how those activities are managed to ensure they are complementary to the services provided by the town centres. As discussed in my evidence in chief, the proposed business mixed use provisions are designed to ensure this will happen. Policy 3.2.111 focuses on providing a planning framework for the secret business areas and enables quality development and enhancement of the centres as the key commercial hubs of the district. In my opinion, the PDP successfully does this through the Queenstown Centre Zone and to a lesser extent the business mixed use zone. Say to a lesser extent as the business mixed use zone is commonly used in tent cities and in a commercial sense. I hear the board disagree with this speaker and that the book requested business in Suicide is inconsistent with policy 3.2 and 3.1. With respect to policy 3.2.112, I reassert that business in Suicide is not a commercial zone or a fundamental land in line with Queensland's central business area as the primary focus for the district. The purpose of the business mixed use zone is complementary commercial business, retail, residential activities, and supplement the activities and services provided by the tent centres. The proposal is therefore in my view consistent with this policy. I therefore disagree with this, given that the requested business mixed use zone is therefore consistent. Ms. Beckland also states that the requested business mixed use zone would not meet policy 12.242, which seeks to ensure that the Queensland Town Centre remains compact and easily walkable by avoiding outward expansion of the Town Centre zone. With respect, that policy relates to the outward expansion of the Town Centre zone. The requested business mixed use zone is not the Queensland Town Centre zone. And as such, this policy requirement is not relevant to the business mixed-use zone. With respect to 14.4, Ms. Beckland investigates the current uses of the site, and that paragraph 14.5 states that this site contains a mix of commercial, visitor accommodation, and residential activities. Ms. Beckland further states that she does not consider these existing uses to form a logical expansion of the business mixed-use zone at the corner of Robbins and Gorch Roads. With respect, in my view, the activities described by Ms. Stephen Allman such a site fit perfectly within the purpose of the business mixed-use zone, possibly better fit than the corner of Gorch and Robbins Road, which was approved as commercial development. For the reasons set out in the summary, I do not resolve from the conclusions I set out in page 28, Mr. Chair.
Yes. This is again the difference between a complementary activity in a business mixed use and an activity enabled by the Queenstown Centre Zone. Can you explain to me what is that difference?
Yes, in terms of from what I understand, the district plan does that by controlling
I got some as an outsider. I couldn't tell for sure. You know, if you can have cafes in both the Queenstown Centre Zone and the BMU, what's complementary? It's just done the same.
Certainly,
a purpose statement doesn't make it happen.
No. The rules, as I understand them, control the sale of liquor, which in the Queenstown Town Centre zone, that is enabled. in the business mixed use site. So not all. I think it was a description in the and
I remember reading that I can't see the distinction there.
Yeah,
but it seems a sharp line, a bright line as they call it these days.
Yeah, the previous zone in the plan, which was called the business activity area or business zone, that had a rule about the size of commercial activities that could occur.
Okay.
And it was sort of designed to have large, not large format retail as we know it today, but larger retail activities. I think it was greater than 500 square metres. So traditionally down in the Court Road we had business cities and large furniture retail businesses like that. But in terms of things above the first floor level, like offices, commercial offices, those types of things, I don't think there's any distinction between the town centre and the plan really has made that distinction in terms of, I guess, bars.
So that would be the main difference?
Yeah, from my understanding, yeah.
And what's the difference? Is it noise control?
It's hours of operation.
Chapter 6, too.
It could be noise as well. Yes, Rule 16.4.3, so licensed premises, between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8 a.m. are restricted discretionary activities. So I guess what they try to do is prevent nightclubs and that type of thing from
creeping up
Gorge Road.
You couldn't creep back down to your hotel.
Yeah.
Okay. A point of clarification about your evidence in chief, but paragraph 4.28, you refer to an SHA. Where is that SHA? Because was that the one that's the photograph of the building? Sorry, the building?
But it's pretty much, from what I understand, they had an SHA over part of the road, and then that lapsed. So they've applied to the minister for another SHA for the whole of the business mixed use zone, including a little bit more land slightly outside the business mixed use zone, and the minister is due to sign off on it at any stage. So
that's right, that accounts for that one. I had a question about height.
Yes.
And the effect of, say, 20 metre height at the frontage of Gorge Road when you view it from the HDR on the eastern side of Gorge Road. Have you considered that?
Mm. Yes, certainly.
There's a distinct difference in amenity values.
Yeah.
Will arise from a change of zoning, as well as a much bulkier building.
Yes, yes. Yep, certainly, and I think that eastern side of Gorge Road there, a lot of the buildings are quite old, and they will go through with time. So they will. No, that's a, is it high density?
It's high density.
That's the piano.
So, you know, at the moment it's probably developed to low density development, as the tradition probably was there. But, you know, over time, those buildings will intensify in density and probably go higher as well. So.
They can go 12 metres.
Yes. Within the recession plans.
If they're a flat site, if they are a sloping site, it's 7 metres with a description of 10 metres.
And I'm trying to remember what it's like on that eastern side. Well, it slightly slopes away down from the road, drive off Gorch Road and
this land rises up. It's certainly not flat land. But there's obviously the creek traverses right through this block here. So this block here is actually quite complicated. Yeah. So this,
A further question was about, but then was the same one that was put to Mr. Ritchie about consideration of the whole block and whether or not it would be a preferable outcome to have the whole block done.
Yeah,
if you're going to make a change at all, change the lock.
Yes, I would agree with that, simply for the reason that when you look at the site situated on Robbins Road, in that corner you've got a hotel. In that corner there's a hotel. Mm. Then you've got a childcare facility, at Queenstown Member School. Both of those activities have been there. Must be 20 years at least.
Yeah.
And there's some, is it a backpackers there?
Backpackers.
And then some older cribs along here, which must be close to the end of the life. Then you've got that retail activity there. And even on the other side of the road, you've got the camping ground here, Hadley Consulting there, the motel there, and then the school. So, it doesn't seem to me that there's a lot of residential amenity left in that as well.
Again, Mr. Chair asked this question of Ms. Ritchie. In viability, assuming the whole block is turned down for business use, what are the business uses that are economically viable in that location?
Yeah, good question. Well, obviously, childcare must be economic. I know the owner of that business who sold it not long ago. He made a good. And the language schools, they've been in this block for many years, so it's a good location for that type of activity. The hotel or motel on the corner. Also the Mediterranean food mart there, that's been very popular over the years. I've never shopped at McKenzie's Ross, so I'm not sure about that, but I think it would be
and
doctor surgeries and things like that, I don't know.
Just from a hard-done commercial point of view, what would make money out of on this site?
Well, today you'd probably make it in high-density residential. I think the problem with the high-density residential is at ground level, it's not particularly attractive, and that's where you would have your commercial activities.
Yeah, and that feeds into my final question, because, forgive me, I'm not a local, but in Auckland now with retail development, it's common to have the ground level floor at a height of 4.8 metres rather than the conventional 3.6.
Mm.
If the sort of activities that would need that kind of space, if they were to move into this block, how many more floors of residential would you get out of the 20 metre site limit on this road? Just out of curiosity.
We did a little experiment, we think, you know, you could get up to, you know, 5 to 6 levels, but if you had a ground, we did a little experiment when we get some car parking underneath, and then we had a ground floor with like 3.6, and then I think we ended up having, you know, 3 residential tenancies on top of that. So,
Underground car parking, it lends itself to that, that's great, yeah.
Yes, so some car parking is commercial,
yep.
And then possibly another 3 levels of residential.
Thanks very much.
I guess that's the distinction between the business mixed use and the town centre, is that car parking is required in the business mixed use zone. Where in the town centre zone it's not required at all. So.
Under the Oxford plan, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Not personally.
That's
okay. Can we just follow up some of those things? I was just thinking about the difference between the BMU and the town centre, and I just jotted down, when we talk about that, it sounds lit, but I just jotted down as well as that, things like retail, office, visitor accommodation. To what extent is that different between the two zones, in terms of scale, or permissibility, or consent status? Or
visitor accommodation... No. The visitor accommodation rules were taken out of the question.
Yes.
So, I don't know what...
You can't go there, yeah. No, that's still in the business.
Still in the business, yes. Okay.
Yes.
Restricted discretionary in the town centre zone, I think they are controlled or permitted.
Retail and office, is there any difference between them?
Retail in the town centre zone is definitely permitted.
Yeah.
And it looks permitted in the business mixed use zone as well. With the exception of the license premises rule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the offices?
Pardon?
And offices?
I think they would be permitted as well, subject to the building being requiring the consent.
What I'm getting at is you asserted quite strongly that the activities in the BMU are complementary rather than competitive. Competitive is not the right word either, but you said complementary, and I'm just, apart from the sound left, I'm struggling to see the difference.
Between complementary and...
Between the town centre and the BMU, in this regard.
Yeah, I guess the town centre is also, has a higher site coverage, and also there's no requirement for car parking.
I guess if you turn the question around a little bit, we've got a town centre here and you've got business mixed use up here, and we're left with this 5 or 6 houses in the middle. If there's not much distinction between there and
yeah,
here,
so
why are we not the same little we...
That's a different issue which I'm very aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Back to the evidence in chief.
Checking in case I missed anything. Oh, I did miss something, Mr. Chief.
Yes?
I meant to ask Mr. Vivian if he'd had the chance to meet Mr. Osborne and Mr. Heath on the subject of capacity enablement.
No, I haven't.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I do have a couple of minutes. Something I could take you to 4.15 of your evidence in chief, something I really didn't understand. In my opinion, Rule 16.4.2, which I haven't looked up, cancels any permitted baseline. I really wonder how you can cancel a permitted baseline through a rule. It's just something that operates because it is permitted. What's the significance of it anyway?
Yes, it is.
So 16.2 is a restrictive discretionary rule for any buildings within the business mixed use zone.
That's the general one.
So I guess my point is there that even though the height of the buildings can increase under business mixed use as opposed to high density, there's no permitted baseline because all buildings are restricted discretionary activity in any case. Yeah, in the business mixed use. Yes.
So if we could go to 4.19. And the proposed addition in height will be consistent with additional height provisions allocated to the proposed adjoining zones.
I didn't understand that either,
because the proposed height is higher than the adjoining zones.
Yeah, that might just be grammar, but I got
you can go to 12 metres as of right, but nobody else, but then you count in the adjoining zones.
In the high density zone, you can go to 12 metres.
Well, we said it was sloping land, though.
Sloping land.
I think it's up to 10 or sloping land.
On the eastern side of Gorse Road, I would definitely classify that as sloping land.
Okay.
So up to in the business mix you say, quite often it is limited. So in the high density residential zone, on sloping land, permitted up to 7 metres, between 7 and 10 metres is a restricted discretionary, and above 10 metres is not required. In the business mixed use zone, up to 12 metres, 12 to 20 metres restricted, above 20. So.
And on the other side, on the western side, would that be flat land?
It is flat.
On what side, sorry?
On the western side of your side.
It slopes down to Horn Creek, which is
it means on the western side of Robbins Road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I didn't actually. I'm on the eastern side of Robbins Road. The adjoining slopes.
So it slopes from Horn Road, it slopes down to Horn Creek,
down too, yeah.
And then back up to Robbins Road. Yeah, no, from Horn Creek to Robbins Road would be probably 7 or 8 metres.
Exactly, would be 7 or 8 metres. I'm not sure, couldn't tell you the slope of the flat side. Given the elevation that we western side of Robbins Road, they are flat sides.
Yeah. And on the
eastern side of Porch Road.
Eastern side of Porch Road with the sloping sides.
Now, perhaps to assist you, if you looked at standard 16.5.1, if we were minded to accept this submission and zone just these sites along Gorge Road, that requirement for a recession plan, which would effectively run along Corn Creek, what effect would that have development on these sites?
Well, it would certainly have an impact on the western side of these sites here. It would allow more bulk to be allowed on the Gorge Road side, certainly.
But if it's, how much lower is the creek than Gorge Road?
I would say 4 to 5 metres.
So you'd be starting the recession line 2 metres below Gorge Road. You're going to go right through the property. But I don't know how wide the properties are, but at 35 degrees, which was the notified.
I think it's 45 degrees on the all boundaries except the northern boundary, which is 55 degrees.
That's the recommended by the plan that's been notified. 35 degrees.
Yes, so you've got Corn Creek. I said 35, sorry.
The residential zone means along the boundary on Corn Creek.
You'd be lucky to get up to the 12 metres, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Good reason to sound cold.
In that regard, is there any submission that gives the panel scope?
To zone in cold block?
Yes.
Number 17 was one, and I know that was involved in a joint submission with the New Zealand Institute of Architects.
That's a great general one.
A great general one, that's right.
Should ever be there in the first place, is that right, Lenny?
Yeah,
that's right. Well, I don't think about that too. Play into cut and paste properly.
No, it's me. Done as the chair.
No. Any questions?
Alright, thank you. So we move on to Richie,
Yeah.
Okay. So there's no summary.
My name is Jeff Bryant.
It was short to start.
Is
that a summary or is it a principal?
It's a summary, but it's a little bit longer than a normal summary.
Yes, but it's the attaching letter, I presume, is a report which has been summarised, is that?
Yes,
just
yes.
The report was 3 pages, 2 pages long.
Sorry, I thought you said it to
you.
How long is it going to take you to read it?
I have 4 pages here to read. Take 4 minutes.
Just go for it. Stay reading. We're
going to see if
you find one copy. If you have something providing one, we can copy it after you read it out. That's the easiest way. And put it on the side.
My name is Jeff Bright. I'm an engineering geologist. I'm engaged by the Ritchie Family Trust on their site on Peninsula Road. I'll just skip all the background, the qualifications,
yes.
The experience, but
I'm
also acting for the Lee Family Trust, who is an adjacent property, and I'm also acting for the Lim's property on the north side of Peninsula Road. I've also been working on the new bridge across the lake out there, and I've been working extensively on the widening of the road, so there's quite a lot of local knowledge I've accumulated in these 4 properties. So I propose to have assessment of hazards, which are covered in the council web map hazards register. That's not a very complete assessment of the hazards. I've also included rockfall hazards, and then I'll discuss the suitability of the land for development. And my evidence is based on the following sources of information. I've done a walkout survey of this property. I've been up near the crest of Peninsula Hill, and I've walked over the land to the west, which is the Mead property, and the land to the north on the north side of Peninsula Road. I've also looked at aerial photographs and satellite images and reviewed previous reports I've done in the area. Just briefly discuss the geomorphology and geology of the area. The area of interest lies on the north flanks of Peninsula Hill and overlooks the Frankton Arm of Lake Wachtaboo. This is a trough that was formerly occupied by an arm of the Wachtaboo Glacier, which had its last advance about 12,000 to 15,000 years ago. Bedrock underlies the hills on either side of the valley and is exposed to steep bands of ice-to-earth rock ranging slope from 40 to 60 degrees with local cliffs steepening up to the vertical. My field mapping and aerial photograph interpretation of the area confirmed the presence of a large landslide extending over the entire site. There's another smaller landslide which abuts this feature to the west, but terminates some distance above and to the west of the site. The lower reaches of the larger landslide is overlain by glacial and post-glacial sediments, which suggests the minimum age for this two landslide of 12,000 to 15,000 years. So it's a very ancient feature. sand and gravel, which has been transported downslope initially by gravity and remobilised by rainfall runoff, and then deposited on the lower flatter slopes, which includes my client's property. Then capping that, there's a material called loess, which is a wind deposited silty sand. Now, on the QLDC hazards register, is they identify the large landslide. They recognise the what they call a landslide area susceptible to falls. This is an area that's susceptible to rock falls, and they also describe this liquefaction. The landslide hazard assessment, this is my assessment, I've done field work within the property. I've done test pits to look at the subsurface materials. I've also walked up around the crest of that hill, and I found no evidence for activity on this and the adjacent property. Number 48, that is, I talked to the landowners a few years ago, but they have said there's noticed no disturbance in their property since occupation, which dates back to the 1970s. So I thus concluded the landslide is dormant, that is, it's not currently active, and it's unlikely to have been active in historical times. Mr. Charlie Watts, acting on behalf of QLDC, has recommended further investigations and stability analyses to inform the planning approval process, but he doesn't provide any threshold or criteria on which approval could be granted. Further investigations which he recommended would require drilling a number of boreholes, both within the property and on slopes higher up, which is private land, so we'd have to get access to access roads up the hillside to get a drill rig in there. This is very expensive and time-consuming exercise, and it would only be normally undertaken for a very large and expensive civil engineering project, like the bridge, for example, but for a small land holding that's normally considered unjustifiable on that scale. An assessment of the static and seismic stability, as recommended by Mr. Watts, would, in my opinion, provide little meaningful information. We already know the static stability. It's the factor of safety, which is a ratio of driving forces as opposed to forces which resist movement. We know that's greater than one because the landslide is there. Mm-hmm. It's stable, it hasn't shown any signs of activity. If there's tension cracks and historical records of movement or fresh scarps exposed, then we'd think, okay, the landslide's moving or it's intermittently moving, we'd say it has a factor of safety one. But from what I gather from my field mapping, it seems to me that the factor of safety must be an excessive one. So that I see no further point in trying to do a lot of expensive investigations to show what we can see just from looking at it. The seismic stability is, well, again, you'd have to do a lot of investigations and also testing of the slip surface material to try and establish what the material properties of the landslide slip surface is. Expensive exercise. But we know that these very old and pre-existing landslides are considerably resilient to all but major earthquakes. So it's been there since retreat of the last glaciation, as I said, it's about 12,000 years ago. And during that time, there would have been a number of earthquakes affecting this area, ranging from, the whole spectrum of them. But we can imagine that there'd be quite a few very large earthquakes and yet there doesn't seem to have been any ongoing movement generated by these this earthquake pattern. So there doesn't seem to be, there's no evidence for disruption of the glacial, post-glacial sediments laid down on top. So if there had been ongoing activation of the landslide, then we would see this covering of sediments disrupted by the ongoing movement. But in fact, we do not see that. So in my opinion, it's that and severe earthquake shaking, the threat from landslide reactivation is likely to be minor compared to the threat of structural damage to any building during such an earthquake. And I think there'll be widespread damage throughout Queenstown in such a severe earthquake. So we have to consider the area-wide impact, so it's not just on property. And the other thing that I'll be more concerned about in the event of severe earthquake shaking would be rock falls, which would be set loose from the hillside or the just above, and I'll discuss this next. So rockfall hazard assessment. Rockfalls are foreseeable yet unpredictable geological events that the subject area is considered susceptible to. We have a source area, the cliffs at the top of the hill. And we can see rocks that have clearly been transported from that source down the hillside. And so further rockfalls can be foreseen. They are foreseeable. They have happened in the past and expected to happen again in the future. However, the following factors are of non-predictable nature. One is the timing and triggering of the rockfall event. We don't know when the next one will be. We don't know what trigger will be. Probably be an earthquake, but it can also be triggered by just weathering off the slope, frost heave, and severe rainfall events, for example. We don't know where on the face these rockfalls will occur, and we don't know the volume of any rockfall event, or the shape or size of the rocks, for example. So there's a lot of unknowns about this. And these factors govern the mobility and the kinetic energy of the blocks. A lot of the blocks that we do see that come off these bluffs are quite slabby rocks because schist tends to break into slabs rather than rounded boulders, for example. And the style of movement is just one of sliding mostly down the hillside, but occasionally they can develop into a much more dangerous form of movement where they start bounding and rolling down the slope. And the last unknown, or the unpredictable factor, is the degree of fragmentation that occurs in their downslope transportation. Now, do they remain intact, or do they out a few rolls or bounces down the hillside? Do they break into a much series of much smaller fragments, which are much less easier to track by other boulders or gullies or trees, for example? So those are the things which make which cloud the rockfall hazard assessment with a lot of uncertainty. Now the main source area is a narrow band of rock cliffs. This is right beneath the hill crest there, the RR790, 820. Mostly the cliffs along that face have been smoothed by glacial action, but not, they don't generally lend themselves to rock falls because during the last glaciation the ice would have smoothed that rock face and plucked out any loose blocks. But nevertheless, in the intervening times since that ice retreated, you do get weathering and you do get rocks falling out. And we can see scars on the hillside which indicate. And we can see rocks below these cliffs, so it does happen. The rock is actually a very competent rock. There are very few defects, such as the joints and the cracks and other discontinuities which traverse the faces. During the Canterbury earthquakes, there was a number of rock falls in Christchurch, but they were occurring on volcanic rocks which have a much different jointing pattern, are much closer spaced than them, and they gave rise to a large number of rock falls during those earthquake seasons. So in the course of walking around the hillside and on the property itself, I identified a number of rocks that had come down. A lot of thick vegetation, unfortunately, so you can't see everything. But I saw enough to make the following observations. Firstly, most rocks that had fallen from the cliffs directly above the property had come to rest only a short distance below the source. So there wasn't a lot that was reaching right down towards Peninsula Road. Some had, however, and there were a few within the property but there's none that could be positively confirmed that they had identified by rockfall line. Bear in mind we're sitting on a landslide, and the landslide has generated a lot of large blocks, so it's hard to tell which has been brought down by the landslide, which is subsequently brought down by rockfall. So it's a confounding factor. It does seem to be a bit of a shallow gully leading between the landslide and the next series of rock bluffs on the western side of the hand. In my opinion, that would act as to guide any rockfalls that came off the cliffs and tend to veer them away off towards the west. But it's only a shallow gully and it can't be relied upon to channel all those rocks away from the property given the unpredictable nature of the travel paths. Some of the large rocks that were visible on the landslide surface, particularly those to the north and east of the property, appear more likely to be placed by landslide setback. But the overall impression, and I'll say this again about the Lee property, is that there's actually a very, very small scree slope beneath these rock cliffs, which tells me that it's not an active process. It hasn't been going on and on and accumulating large numbers of rock. This is an important feature to remember when considering the threat of the rock falls. Because there's not a lot of rocks there, it happens, but it's very rare. Neighbouring property, there are a number of tracks, there's none in the vicinity of the Ritchie property or slope, but to the west there's quite a few farm tracks which traverse up and down the hillside. And there's a deer fence running on there. I found no rocks that had landed on these tracks or had penetrated through the deer fence, which is put in the 1980s. So there doesn't seem to have been any activity since then. So from these observations, I have inferred that the rock falls are an infrequent process occurring sporadically since the last glaciation, which could be triggered by strong earthquake shaking or other environmental factors. There appears to be no activity in the last few decades. There's seen the lack of debris or tracks, the absence of power through vegetation, and the presence of lichen on all the visible rocks. Mr. Frank Mee, he's in his 90s now, I think, he says that he couldn't recall any rock falls on the farm.
Why couldn't he recall?
Probably. But this is through his son Mike. He said that he couldn't recall any rock falls since his purchase in the 1960s. In 1960. So my overall impression is that this rock falls is thus seen as very low to extremely low. Liquefaction is not an issue. So, to conclude, the suitability of the property for development and consideration of the hazards affecting the property can be shown that rock falls represent quite a significant threat, albeit one of very low, extremely low risk. We could mitigate this risk further by constructing some sort of protection structure, e.g. a fence or a bund, on the upslope side of any habitable structure. and we'd have to look at how the land is developed. If we had, for example, three houses, one above each other, then you'd only be able to fence above the top house. But the houses were spread horizontally, then the fence would have to be across. And so any habitable structure really needs some protection. So with that in mind, I think the property could be suitable for range of zoning options, provided the flood recommendation, previous recommendation is action. So that's my presentation.
Well, before we go into questions, we're going to have a lunch moment.